Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Banca Sistema 9 months 2015 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. During the call, please refer to the slides available on Banca Sistema's website. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Gianluca Garbi, CEO of Banca Sistema. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon to everybody. I'm here with the CFO, Margherita Mappelli, and Carlo Di Pierro, investor relator. So I'm pleased today to announce our continued good performance of Banca Sistema. I will sum up the 9 months result, and I will explain our commercial performance, and then I will leave to Margherita to go more in deep with the financial, and at the end of Margherita's presentation, we will be available for a Q&A session. So I'm looking at page 3 of the presentation that is available on the website. So in the first 9 months of 2015, the net income was up 22%, excluding the non-recurring item due to the IPO process, with the net interest income rising by 21% on a year-on-year basis, total income up 10% on a year-on-year basis, with the trading income from government bond portfolio, as expected due to the level of interest rate, that is down 45% on a year-on-year basis, and return on average equity 35%, including the primary component of the IPO. The factoring turnover for the 9 months of the year was up 20% on a year-on-year basis, confirming also 92% of this turnover coming from recurring business of existing client. The CQS loan, so salary secure loan, outstanding has reached 83 million, and SME financing guaranteed by the government at 80% has reached 73 million. In terms of balance sheet, retail funding represents 41% of the total funding, and the cost of the funding on average is now at 200 basis points versus 320 basis points of the same period of last year, with an average duration of term deposit at 15.9 months. Core Tier 1 and total capital ratio has reached respectively 16.2% and 20%, and leverage ratio at 4.6%. Moving to slide 4 of the presentation, the growth of 20% is in line with our expectation, and take also into account the seasonality of our business, where we expect almost 40%, as happened also in the previous year, of the turnover being concentrated in the last quarter of the year. And again, we expect that to happen also for this current year, where most of the company will sell the portfolio in order to achieve their target net financial position. The VAT accounted at the end of September for 7% of our total outstanding, and we expect for this business to further grow in the future, also driven by the change in Italian legislation of 2015 with the introduction of the split payment. Also, the client base has continued to grow with the increased number of clients, which is also driven by the agreement that has been reached by traditional banks where distribute our product for us. At the end of the period, we have also outstanding loan which are, as mentioned before, of the CQS as outstanding of CQS 83 million, which is close to half of the amount of 150 million, which is the target that we consider the threshold in order to consider securitization for this type of asset class, and the same apply for the SME financing. Moving to the slide 5 and more in deep on these two business lines, so we have continued to see the growth on both of them. In particular, looking at the SME state guarantee, we continue to have a conservative policy. The split by industry is in line with the proper allocation of the risk, and also the geographical split is in line with our expectation. So let me pass on to Margherita that takes you through more in detail on the number from page 6.
Sure. Thank you, Gianluca. Good afternoon to everybody. We are on slide 6. As you can see, we continue to deliver a robust organic growth with a normalized net income of 18.3 million for the last 9 months of 2015, which is up 22% year on year, excluding the non-recurring item from the IPO. Net interest income is the main driver of our total income growth. Net interest income, as you can see from the slide, is up 21%, driven by higher factoring volumes, lower cost of funding, higher contribution from salary secure loans, SME loans, which more than compensate for the pretty stable margins that you have seen on the core business factoring public administration. The carry trade of our government bond portfolio runs at 0.2% in the first 9 months of 15, for a total amount on the net interest income of 1.2 million against 1.8 reported in the first 9 months of 2014. As a consequence of the financial market and, of course, due to the short, very short duration of our available for sale government bond portfolio, we have seen a decrease of 45% in the trading income from government bonds year on year. Total operating costs are pretty stable, and this is excluding non-recurring items from the IPO, as previously mentioned, with an increase of personal expense of 7.6%, and this is, of course, due to a higher number of headcount in accordance with our plans and, of course, in accordance with the business growth. Other administrative expense and costs are pretty stable. We are also pleased to see the contribution to our P&L from our CS Union participated entity of 0.3 million. This is the minority participation in our in the NPL business, which is booked in our balance sheet for less than 3 million. Moving on to slide 7, as you can see, total assets, we look at the balance sheet now, total assets reached 2.3 billion at the end of September 15, up roughly 10% year on year from September 2014. Sorry, from end of year 2014. We have a stable government bond portfolio in the available for sale book with an average duration of 7.3 months compared to 9.3 months as of the end of June 15. Our strategy is to continue to see our government bond portfolio as a mean for our Treasury Department to continue to build and increase relationships with the banks. And of course, we do not expect that to be our predominant source of revenues. Factoring receivables are in line with the end of last year, and of course, take into account the cyclical trends of the business. Salary secured loans and SME loans represent 6% of total customer loans, and they keep growing, as Gianluca was also mentioning previously. On the funding side, so looking at the liabilities, we have reduced our exposure, looking at the wholesale funding, we have reduced our exposure to the ECB, and we have increased the funding on the repo market, and this is due to the lower cost of funding that we are seeing on the short-term repo market. Thanks to the higher liquidity buffer and increased interbanking funds and credit lines, we have reduced slightly our retail funding, meaning term deposits and current account, which are slightly lower compared to 2014 year end. total own funds reached 106.3 million euro and common equity tier 1 86.3 as of the end of September 15, and this is including the third quarter 2015 net income. Capital ratio, total capital ratio 20% and common equity tier 1 ratio 16.2%, again including the last quarter. Moving on to slide number 8, we would like to go more in detail on the total income trends, and this is on slide number 8. Net interest income represents 80% of the total income and is up 21% year on year. Total income increased from 48.8 million in 9 months 2014 to 53.8 in 9 months 2015, and this is due to lower interest expense. In fact, retail funding cost is 80 basis points lower year on year, from 320 basis points in the first 9 months of 2014 down to 240 in the first 9 months as an average of 2015. We have higher contribution from salary secured loans and SME loans, which is up 4.1 million year on year. These increases, as previously mentioned, compensate for the lower contribution from our government bond portfolio, which is down 2.6 million year on year, declining both on the carry trade side, on the interest income side, as well as the trading income side. We have an increased weight from non-factoring products, which now equal 9% of total interest income for the first 9 months of 15. On the following slide, which is slide number 9, you will see that our operating cost remained pretty stable year on year, thanks primarily to the scalability of our platform. Personal expense represents 41% of our total operating cost and increased from 9 million from 9 million in 2014 to 9.7 in 2015, reflecting the higher number of head count as previously mentioned. We moved from 112 head count at the end of September 14 to 136 at the end of September 2015. Servicing costs, which represent 21% of total operating costs, are fully variable costs and relate to the servicing of our factoring portfolio, decreased year on year, mainly thanks to lower rebates to our external servicer. Administrative expenses are lower year on year as well. Moving to slide number 10 and looking at the funding, our retail funding represents 41% of total funding, in line with what we have reported at the end of June 2015. Wholesale funding is composed primarily by repo today, traded on the MTS platform, and to a lower extent derived from ECB financing and interbank deposits. Interbank's funding has raised to 200 million, and we have today 350 million of uncommitted credit lines that we can leverage as needed. Total retail funding is lower compared to the end of 2014 and amounts to 843 million as a consequence of two rate reductions that we have offered to our clients in May and September this year. Customer deposits represent 63% for a total amount of 535 million term deposits, of which 80% comes from customers which are based 8% from customers which are based in Germany. The average residual maturity of our term deposits is 16 months, as Gianluca was mentioning previously, which is slightly up from June 2015. Retail funding costs decreased year on year, but was a pretty stable quarter on quarter as a consequence of the longer maturity that we are seeing on the new term deposits in the last quarter. Now we move to slide number 11, where we look at the provisioning policy. 95% of our balance sheet, as we know, is related to public administration. Our NPL ratio is around 1.5% as of the end of September 2015, against an average of 10% in the banking industry in Italy in general. The increase in doubtful loans from 54.9 million at the end of June 2015 to 97.1 at the end of June 2015 is mainly driven by the increase in past due loans following a new, more conservative classification of our factoring receivable, and again entirely relates to public administration receivables. In the first 9 months of 15, loan loss provision amounted to 3.9 million. And the relative cost of risk amounted to 54 basis points against 44 basis points in June 15. And this is due to the entry of new public entities in the distress status, meaning that we are taking additional provisions based on our conservative impairment policy. I think I can now leave to Gianluca for the final remarks.
Yeah, thank you, Margherita. So in a nutshell, we continue to see a consistent growth across the banks, including the new opportunity that we have entered into it last year. We continue to have a stable and diversified funding base with a continued decrease on the cost of funding. We demonstrate that the platform is efficient and also scalable, and that is also seen on the cost-income ratio. And we are pleased to deliver to all the shareholders a quite good return on average equity. Now, I'm pleased to take any question that the audience may have.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Christian Carrese of Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Christian Carrese, Intermonte. I have four questions. The first one is if you can give us an outlook on the fourth quarter in terms of turnover and what do you expect in terms of net interest income compared to the third quarter trend. The second question is on cost of risk. I saw that you had a more conservative provision policy in this quarter with a cost of risk up to 54 basis points. I was wondering if this level has to be seen as a normalized cost of risk, or there was just a one-off this year due to the different way of classifying past due loans? And if you can just clarify how does it work, because distressed PA entities in distressed status are just for a period, I mean, they are becoming again performing when they are going to pay. So if you can clarify the mechanism to classify those loans. The first question is on risk-weighted assets. I see that there was a slight decrease in terms of common equity ratio due to the risk-weighted assets inflation in the third quarter. Again, this has to be seen as a one-off, or the weighting on over risk-weighted assets will be higher from now on. And finally, the fourth question is on the cash you raised through the IPO, the 37.5 million euro capital increase. Do you see any potential target in the short term to increase the size of your loan portfolio and therefore also revenues? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Maybe we collect further questions.
Okay, so the next question is from Philip Dobbin of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi there. So this will probably cover some of the area in the last question. What I was going to ask was, given that Q3 factoring turnover looked pretty well unchanged year on year, What is the outlook for Q4, and do you remain confident of the consensus forecast for full-year normalized net income? Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Enrico Esposti of Banca Akros. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. I have two more questions left. The first one is on net interest income. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the net interest income sensitivity to the reduction in interest rates? I mean, are you able to maintain unchanged prices and improve your margin? The second one is again on acquisitions. Is it reasonable to expect the conclusion of a deal by the end of the first quarter of 2016? Thank you.
The next question is from Tony Dang of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Tony Dang from Barclays. Good afternoon, everyone. Just about three questions for me, please. Firstly, do you have any commentary on the payment behavior of the public administration in Q3? Have you seen any stimulus to make them pay faster? And so has this affected your gross asset yields, causing some compression? The second question is on your cost to income ratio. At 44%, I think it is up versus the 42% in the half year. It is mainly driven by the increase in headcount. And what is your guidance for the employee number by year end, please, from the current 136? And my third question is on the cost of funding. The blended cost of funding of 2.4% looks stable versus the half-year number. Do you see that this is where it's going to settle for now, at least in Q4? What is your deposit take-on rate at the moment? I think your last guidance, it was quite low at 1.1%. That's it. Thank you.
The next question is from Ralph Elmir of SPGP. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. So I have a question regarding, you know, CET1 going down. Is it a constraining relative to your acquisition plan, and what would be your comfortable level of CET1 in the future, post acquisition maybe? Thank you.
Okay, if there's no any other question, we'll start to take all the questions. So maybe the first one from Intermonte, Margherita.
Yeah, the first question, I think it was related to the last quarter turnover and expectation on net interest income. I think what we can say is that the last quarter of the year, as we expect to see the usual seasonality that we have seen in the past on the factoring turnover. So I think we can say that yes, we do expect significant volumes coming through in the last quarter of the year, as we've seen in the past compared to the first three quarters. So the seasonality is still in line with what we've seen in the past, and we expect the volumes to come over in the last quarter. In terms of the net interest income, and maybe this is also taking another question which relates to the cost of funding, we can see what we can say that we expect is in line with what I just said in relation to the business, is that the cost of funding will continue to be pretty stable and to a certain extent decrease as term deposits on the retail side will keep expiring and they will keep being renewed at lower rates. We have decreased the rates again in September. The take-on rate in the last week of September was 1.1%. So we do expect cost of funding to keep going down, given its positive impact on the net interest margin.
Now, the second question is the cost of risk, whether it's normalized and how does it work when a city enters into distress. Now, let me first of all clarify from a legal standpoint, what the distress of a city means. So when a city enter into the so-called dissesto, distress situation, what happen is that you have an extraordinary administration, and in parallel you have an ordinary business that it keep continue to work. Now, what the extraordinary administrator does, they try to look at the total asset to understand what is the total liability of the city. Then they will offer some settlement agreement of these versus all the creditors. The settlement agreement may be 50%, 60%, depending on a case-on-case basis. On average, we have seen that the offer is around 60% that they offer. But different from any other default procedure, the creditor is not obliged to take the offer. In other words, when a company enters into distress, the majority of the creditor will force all the creditors. While when a city enters into dissesto, you don't have the majority power, but is on individual basis. So the individual creditor can decide to accept or not to accept the offer that is made from the extraordinary administrator. Now, if you don't accept the offer, you wait for the process of extraordinary administration to close, which on average take about 3 years from the date this started. And at that point in time, you can claim against the city your nominal value of the credit plus the interest that has been accrued since the beginning of the procedure. Now, in this case, what we typically do is when a city enters into distress, we take a provision of 50% of the nominal value. Then we wait for the offer coming from the extraordinary administrator. And typically, since this happen, it may take 1 year before the extraordinary administrator is able to have a full picture and start to make offer. At that point, we decide whether to accept or not to accept the offer. And we decide to accept or not to accept the offer based on the fact that, based on the price that we have purchased those receivables. Because if we have purchased those receivables at 30% towards face value, we may be more than happy to accept an offer at even 40%. If we have purchased for an higher, so we will have to see on a case-by-case basis. So what happened is effectively there's a provision, and this provision, depending on whether we settle or not, is going to be released. So the increase of provisioning that you see on the quarter, and by the way, if you look at the seasonality, there's not really a clear trend of this seasonability of the default coming from the city. We have looked back on the history of the country and to understand whether there are some period where city enter more in distress or not, but there's absolutely zero correlation across the years. When we look at the number of the last quarter of this year, we have taken some position, and at the same time, on the same year, we have released also some position because some distress has been released. So this cost of risk it will continue in the future, whether on the same pace or not, we don't really know, because we cannot really predict that to happen. But the truth is we will not accept any settlement unless we will have achieved our target return. So the provisioning, it may be considered conservative. We are having some internal debate whether this 50% provisioning maybe is quite excessive, because the other player in the market don't take this type of provision. But for the time being, we are keep taking this provision, and when the extraordinary administration ends or whether we settle, we release it. The third question is on the LWA, whether it's a one-off, Margherita?
Yeah, I think that on that was related to the past due increase and increase in the RWA. I think this what we can say is that we pretty much expect that to be a one-off situation, so that to remain stable in the future.
Okay, then the fourth question, which is also entailed, I try to answer to the fourth question from Intermonte, but also added on the second question from Akros and maybe the question from SPGP, is about the acquisition. We are working on some transaction. We hope to be able to announce those transactions. Some of these, two of these transactions are with lawyers and on the counterparty. So I would say in principle there is agreement, but is SPA are negotiated by the lawyers. Now in terms of whether we have sufficient capital, yes we do, and what we consider the even post acquisition the capital in terms of Core Tier 1, let me answer by saying that the majority shareholder have agreed in their shareholder agreement no dividend in case the total capital ratio will follow below 14%. So to a certain extent, you can take this number as a number to be the minimum that the shareholders self-impose themselves. So I will be able, I hope during the next conference for the last year result to be able to take you through some of the transaction. Of course, this is not only dependent on our side and is pretty much in the end of also the lawyers, even though we don't see at this stage any major impediment. Jeff's question about the turnover, what we will see for the last quarter of the year. As I mentioned, usually the last quarter of the year represent 40% of our total annual turnover, because it's when majority of the large corporate sell receivable. We have today, in terms of pipeline, a visibility that of transaction that is 30% above our budgeted amount. Of course, we cannot guarantee that this will be closed, but certainly the pipeline we see today is above 30% above our budgeted number. Now, in terms of Akros' first question about what is the current yield on the factoring, whether we have seen decline or not, if we look at the change on a year-on-year basis, we are talking about 0.1% of declining. It is clear from our point of view that our aim is not to make turnover for the sake of making turnover. So we make turnover if we are at the right contribution margin. If we are not, there's no reason why we should simply do generate turnover and on the side of it have an operational cost that has to follow this turnover. So with that in mind, if we look at the change in the price on the factoring side, the reduction was 0.1%, which is much less, of course, than the reduction of cost of funding.
The net interest margin.
Yeah. So please, Margherita.
I'm just saying that what we are seeing on the trend that Gianluca was describing is that if we see pretty much a stability on the factoring side, of course on the net interest margin deriving from the core business, what we are seeing is that we are able to maintain quite stable margins on the income side, despite the cost of funding is going down. So the net interest margin on the core business, as Gianluca was saying, is only 0.1% down compared to the end of last year.
Now, the question from Barclays, payment behavior. Well, two days ago, Bank of Italy has issued a document about the outstanding, and 2 weeks ago the Prime Minister had admitted that he failed in the repayment. He used Roman slang in order to describe the situation, which was merode, but which I cannot really translate rather than saying I'm really upset. Because clearly all the plan, all the good behavior of trying to reduce the problem did not succeed. Bank of Italy stated yesterday that the total outstanding is now 50 billion. Now, 50 billion, it could be considered a reduction from the 70 billion, unless you take into account that since the beginning of the year, the VAT is no longer finance because due to the split payment, the VAT is no longer financed and paid to the supplier. So if you net it off by the effect of the VAT, the reduction is really minimal. Then the other point that has also come up in the last few days is that in particular some of the region has used the money that were supposed to be used to pay the backlog in another way. So the region Piemont is under a procedure from the Court of Auditors because they have received the money from the government, but rather than pay the overdue, they use those money to do other stuff. So this has also caused a situation where reduction of delay has stopped at the end of last year, and what we have seen and we are seeing is an increase of delay by public administration. Of course, that does not apply to everybody. It is clearly applied to some of the entity. But if you take, for instance, a situation where there were some improvement in the region, Calabria, for instance, which rather than paying 500 days, now they are paying 450 days. So it's a huge improvement, but really far, far away from the 30 days, which is the supposed due date. Besides of that, because of the split payment, the problem has been moved to another area, which is the VAT receivables. Now, when you claim the VAT in Italy, it takes about 2 years in order to get the money back. And the delay on the refund of the VAT of tax in general is not subject to any European directive. And therefore, this is a business where we expect to grow going forward. And the size of this market, it could represent something like 48 billion. In Italy. The calculation that I'm making is very simple. 240 billion is the total spending every year by the government. The average rate of VAT is 10%. Average delay 2 years. So 10% of 240 billion is 24 billion. For 2 year delay is 48 billion of financial gap that need to be financed through this delay of VAT. And the VAT is not subject to any European legislation for late payment. Margherita, the second question from Barclays, cost income, whether we do expect to increase the number of employees from now to the year end.
I think what we can say is that we do not expect to increase the number of employees from now to year end. So we are now at 136 employees, up from 113 at the end of 2014. I think this is the level that will remain stable at up until the end of the year. And in terms of cost income, of course, what we can say is that we expect to see the current trend that that we're seeing, that so that to remain pretty stable.
While I think that the third question from Barclays, the cost of funding and the deposit taken rate, you already answered, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you can repeat it.
On the cost of funding side, the cost of funding, as I was mentioning previously, on the retail side is going down. It's down to 2.4%. Compared to 3.1% in last year. What we have seen in the last quarter is that the cost of funding on the retail side has remained pretty stable also compared to the last quarter, and this is due to the fact that time deposits have increased their average duration. So we were taking on new deposits with a longer duration, and that of course has an impact on slowing down the decreasing trend that we were seeing on that side. That has been that is addressed in September with a rate cut on customer deposits, which we made in September. And as I was mentioning, the take-on rate on new deposits at the end of September was back to 1.1%.
Okay, I think that we answered to all the question. I don't know if there are any other questions.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is from Roberto Casoni of Otus Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, everybody. Most of the questions have been asked. I'm just out of curiosity. I see net commissions of 8 million for the 9 months flat year on year, whilst volumes are up overall by around 20%. Out of my knowledge is that commissions are normally related to the amount of volume that you basically sign off. Is there any reason behind it?
Okay.
And the next question is a follow-up from Tony Dang of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi there. On this description of the new PA entities in distress status, are they PA entities where when you bought the portfolio they were not distressed and now they have become distressed? Because I thought that if you were buying receivables from a PA that you already knew were distressed, then you can factor this knowledge into a bigger discount to face value when you purchase the portfolio of the receivables. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no any other question, let me answer to these two questions. First, net commission. Now, as our business is factoring without recourse, when we price to the client, for us it's absolutely indifferent whether we take a discount or a commission. This is mainly driven by the type of agreement that we have with the various clients. So when we look at the active commission, so the commission that we charge to the client, you need to see that in combination with the discount. So for us, whether is a discount or is a commission doesn't really matter, because we amortize the commission and the discount exactly in the same way. While for the commission that we pay, the commission we pay are driven by the collection. So as more turnover, clearly there is a commission that we pay to the collector, and there are variable depending on how fast they collect. So that is the driver on the commission side. I don't know if Margherita would like to add something
much,
more.
It's pretty much that on the commission that we pay out, we include both the banking commissions and factoring introducing commissions, which of course are following the increase on the business side. So what we see is that we increase on the cost side, the commission that we pay out are increasing higher than what we're seeing on the commission income side, because of what Gianluca has described in terms of pricing on the factoring side.
Now, in terms of the distress, is a combination of a situation where we have already bought at the distress, or that they enter into distress after we have purchased. Now, the fact that they enter into distress after we have purchased, that doesn't necessarily mean that we didn't take into account the possible distress, because for every single authority or local entity, we do the underwriting. The entity that are soon to enter into distress, typically they are in the status of piano pluriennale di ammortamento, so is an agreement that they have reached with the court of auditors for this repayment of their debt. So even if they are not technically distressed, if they are in that status, we are able to anticipate and price in a way that is not really distressed, but is the risk that they enter into distress is so high, so we take that into account. Then, of course, we have entity that we have purchased not in distress and with no expectation that they will have entered into distress. And in this case, of course, the distress is taken in full. Now, clearly, for the first two cases, we are probably more than prepared to accept the offer from the extraordinary administration. For the last case, we are probably not prepared to accept the offer. And so we wait for the procedure to close, and then we claim 100% of the total amount. Is also one note that I think that is important to mention is the fact that we have purchased maybe some of the city not in distress, with the assumption that they will not enter into distress, doesn't necessarily mean that we are not able to hedge ourselves by purchasing afterward the same city from other counterparty with a very low price. So in these cases, if we have purchased from one entity a city at 90% of face value, then the city enters into distress, and another entity, or maybe even the same entity, will sell to us the city, and we purchase at 30% face value, we can still offset the two, and we can still accept the offer from the extraordinary administration. So, if in the worst case scenario, we need to wait for the end of the procedure and then claim the nominal plus interest. I don't know if there is any other follow-up question.
Mr. Garvin, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Have a good evening, good weekend, and talk to you soon. Bye.